Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let me get this out the way so there ain't no complications later on for us.
It's Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Again, we thank you for joining us Sunday afternoons 4 to 6. We talk all things relationships. And today we're talking about loving while caregiving. And we have a great panel of guests here who are here to discuss it. So this segment, we're going to talk about how to get from diagnosis to living fully with dementia. And I'm going to address this first question to Mia. Oftentimes you hear about Alzheimer's, but occasionally you hear the term dementia. Are they one in the same?
So the answer is no. And I think oftentimes we hear people use those two words interchangeably. So you might hear someone say, my mom has Alzheimer's, but not dementia. And so one of the things that we want to do as a group is to kind of clear up some of the misconceptions. So just so we all have a clear understanding, dementia is a general category that describes problems with thought, mood, behavior, language, judgment. Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia. There are many different types of dementias, but we know that Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. And recently we released some statistics that have stated that more than 150,000 Georgians are living with Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. So we do want people to know that there is a difference between the two, and that's really the basis of our education programs, to say, you know what the difference is and when to seek help.
Are there tests out there to see if a person have been pre-diagnosed with dementia?
So I would say there are a lot of medical tests that can help people kind of get to a diagnosis. The very first place to start would obviously be to speak to their primary care physician, to talk about those changes that are happening, and most importantly, to ask for a memory screening. So I would always start there with your primary care physician and create that annual testing so that you know if there's a change in your baseline. From there, doctors will do a battery of tests, MRI, blood work, family history, and it really is a process of elimination to get to a diagnosis. So we say, you know, start with a memory screening. If that indicates something's wrong, there is further testing that can be done.
Is there an age in which you will start noticing a parent or a grandparent or a person in your life that's suffering with either dementia or might have the possibility of Alzheimer's?
So you know what, that's a great question, because I think we would usually just say age 65. We know that's the greatest risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. But we are seeing people younger and younger develop the disease. And anyone that develops the disease before age 65 would have younger onset. So I would say notice or look for changes that are not normal to that person. If it's happening on a daily basis, if changes are affecting your activities of daily living, these are things that you want to look for and really know yourself before, you know, you come to a conclusion that it might be Alzheimer's and dementia. Know if it's different from your normal behavior.
Let's take a call. Lena is calling out of Atlanta. Your question or comment, Lena?
Yes, I took care of my mother from 85, who had dementia, to 2017. And it's not an easy task, but for caregivers, they got to find something for them to release that frustration. Every 30 days, they need to go somewhere or do something. So so that they can continue to love and be a caring caregiver for a person with dementia. I'm taking care of my brother now who has developed dementia from a stroke that he has had. He's had two massive strokes and 7 TIs, which dementia runs in our family as a part of our family history. So just hang in there, and it's not easy, but just find you a group that you can vent with also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, Ms. Lena, what you're saying is so correct. And I want to make sure I stress that the research that I do when I'm out in the community, I try to work with caregivers because I don't want them to forget about self-care and taking care of themselves. Because sometimes when you're taking care of someone else and you're putting it all, your all into it, then you find yourself and your health will go down and you get high blood pressure, you get stressed out, and then you get sick. And so I've ran across a lot of families where the caregiver end up having just recently stage 4 chronic kidney failure. And I just had saw her 2 months ago. And then I heard that. But that, again, points out to how you really need to take care of yourself. And I don't know if Camille, if you want to speak a little bit more about that.
Yes, as taking care of my mom, when I first got her, I knew nothing. And I went from 117 pounds to 132 pounds thick real quick. Stopped going to the gym, didn't have a social life. My life was focused on my mom from sun up to sundown. So it's really important that you get with a support group. That is really important. Make sure your family is in tune with you as well. And also, I call the Alzheimer's Association the hidden jewel because there you can call the 800 number and they can give you the resources to support you as well for a support group also. But, go to your church. Your church is good. Your church will listen to you just like any other support group. But I found through my trials and tribulations was that I needed a support group and I didn't have that.
Now, we talked about this, but we definitely want to delve into it a little bit more. If you start noticing symptoms with your loved one, what do you need to do?
So I think one of the first things that we would suggest is being very honest about what those symptoms are. I always tell family members we can easily self-diagnose ourselves or diagnose someone else. But we need to be clear about what the symptoms are. So, there's a normal age-related changes, and then there's changes related to dementia. So I think it's people being very clear on what those symptoms are, but also having a conversation with that person about, I've noticed some changes. We want to be very gentle about that. We don't want to be accusatory. But if you can't have that conversation, one of the best things that you can do is kind of keep a log of those changes that someone might be having. And maybe it's a conversation between the daughter and the doctor and not mom and the daughter that needs to happen. But I would say you can attempt a conversation if you think that person might be open to it. If not, keeping a log would be the best approach to that.
And one more thing I just want to tag in is sometimes, and I want families and caregivers to really listen, sometimes that person that is being affected with dementia, they start recognizing these symptoms first. They start realizing that something is missing. And if they come to you and they share that with you, please do not just push them off. Mm-hmm. Have that conversation and let's see. Because, I talk to a lot of persons that are living with dementia and it starts off with they think I'm just playing. They just think I'm mean, and they just want to put me on some psych drugs or something like that. So, but again, that person that's living with dementia, they also start noticing. So it's really good to initially have that gentle conversation. And I really want to tell families to listen. To listen, if someone's telling you that they're experiencing memory loss or they forgot something and it never came back to their memory, that's that difference. Normal age is it'll be slow to come back to us. Mm-hmm. Like our joints get old. It's slow for us to get up sometimes. Well, that's, you know, with normal aging. But when you have a form of dementia, it does not come back. And if they start telling you that, you need to really listen, because early detection is key. So we can start seeking treatment.
404-892-2703, 404-892-2703. Now, I also want to leave with this question, and we can address it when we come back. Are there other research studies or care options to support care partners and individuals living with dementia? We'll address that when we return right here on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Like us on Facebook at Love and Relationships Show. Leave us your questions and comments. It's Love and Relationships with Joyce Littell on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
So sad to see you go so soon. I know that you ain't coming back.
It's Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Today we're talking about loving while caregiving, and we have a great panel of guests here to share this information with you. When we went into the break, I asked the question, are there other research studies and care options to support care partners and individuals living with dementia? And where should the listeners who are listening today go for reliable resources? Who want to attack that?
So I will start off first. This is Dr. Epps, and talk about the research piece, because it's really important for us to be involved in research. And there are research studies that focus on caregiving. There is one study that I'm part of where we do online caregiving education, and you don't even have to leave your house. It is, and we recruit from across the nation. And if you're interested in that, the number is 404-712-9578. And the name of that study is the TeleSavvy Study. And I really promote that because it's really good to get information. You heard Betty say earlier, you know, if you don't know, but once you know and then you learn about caregiving strategies, it's going to really change and impact your life. And then there's another study that I'm working on. It's actually with the churches. And that's with one of Pastor Jake's, is one of the churches I'm working with, where we're really trying to, Camilla mentioned how the church to be that support, that place of a resource. So I'm working with a couple of churches in the Atlanta area where I'm trying to make sure that they have the resources, that their church leaders are aware and know what dementia is, inclusive of Alzheimer's, and how to support their family members. And if you're interested in learning more how to be about that, to be part of that study, because we are looking for families to help us out and test this these guidelines that we have, the number is 404-413-1204. And there's also more research with the Alzheimer's Association. We have the clinical trials and a 1-800 number that they can call as well.
Right. So this is Mia, and I just want to mention that we have a website called trialmatch.org, and people can visit the website and put in their demographic information, and the website will actually tell you which studies you qualify for that are within your area. Aside from that, I think we have a really great benefit in the Metro Atlanta area, which is the Emory Alzheimer's Disease Research Center, where they are doing a lot of the current studies, and we're actually supporting some of those studies financially as well. So we have that local resource, and I always say, you know, research is really, that's going to be the tool to get us where we need to be to ultimately find a cure for Alzheimer's disease. So we want people to learn about what's current in regards to research. Other resources that people can take advantage of would be the local area agency on aging. And we also know the nonprofits such as the Alzheimer's Association, and then what we're doing with Faith Village Connections too can help people. And I think too, relying on your church, maybe the health ministry knows about resources that are available to you. So I say ask. People might know, and they might be able to say, this was helpful to me. And Camilla, I think you talked a little bit about that as well, that you found a resource and you utilize it. So word of mouth is important.
Yes, it is.
And then, Mia, can you give the 1-800 number for Alzheimer's Association that's open 24/7?
Yes. So our 800 number is 1-800-272-3900.
All right. Tell me why you think our community, African-American community, don't seek out more studies or resources, you know, when they come upon, you know, this problem or this issue?
Well, I'll start. This is Dr. Epps. And I think it's two things. One of the things is the lack of knowledge and the not knowing exactly what things are out there and how it can benefit them. And then the other one is, you know, what we've heard, that just the mistrust that has been there with healthcare systems and with researchers. And so I think that has been really big. But when we go out, we educate them. We let them know that there's a lot of things in place that can protect them. But, of course, we won't forget the Tuskegee study. We will not experiment. We will not forget Henrietta Lacks. Those things exist. But as a result of that, there's a lot of things that's put in place. So researchers like myself, we cannot abuse the situation and abuse participants.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's about protecting them. And so, you know, in our community, in the African-American community, as soon as I go out and I talk about research, you hear, oh, and, you know, and they're ready to leave. But, you know, yeah, that's the only way we can really find a cure. And that's the only way we can advance and know what works for us. There's a lot of medications that's out there, and there's a cure that's probably be coming out for Alzheimer's disease in a couple of years. But guess who they're testing the drug on? White men.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when it comes out, we're going to grab it and we're going to try to give it to our Black family members. But is it really going to work? So, again, a lot of programs that's out there, if they've been tested on the majority population, but our community, the Black community, is not taking advantage and trying to see if it works.
Out of fear? Do you think it's out of fear?
Yeah, that might be the main thing, fear. And I go back. This is what my family told me. I'm from Louisiana. And they was like, we just don't do that. We just do not participate in research. That's just not what we do. You know, so, you know, it was like that's what was just put in us, and I'm going against the grain, and I'm like, no, we do participate in research. How can we make things better for ourselves? But, you know, you said fear, but then, you know, it's like when you're raised a certain way, it's just instilled in you, and so mm-hmm. you don't even know why.
Mm-hmm.
Why you're not participating in research. So really, you know, come out to the forums, any education, and just call. I always tell people, if you're interested and this study looks interesting, call them and talk to them and ask them, what you're going to do to protect me? Can I get my results? Because a lot of families feel like, oh, they're not going to give me my test results. They're going to use them. But no, ask them.
Yeah,
will I be able to get my results?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Dr. Epps. You have rights, you know, and every research project is not the same. Every research is not about just popping a pill or testing using medication. You know, the research that we're doing with Faith Village Connections is where we are going into the churches and looking at how a modified church service can enable not only the caregivers, but the person with dementia to be able to go back to church. Because you know what we do when people come to church and they're not acting right or quote unquote, or acting like we think they should. Or, you know, they need to get out of here. They need to take them out of church. You know, even if a baby is crying, you know, that mama just need to take that baby out of church. So there are some behaviors as it progresses. But music is so therapeutic for a person with dementia. And they can get a lot from it. And returning to the service can be good for them as well as for the caregiver who needs that emotional support during that time. Mm-hmm. So all research, you know, some of it is just about participation and giving mm-hmm. your information and your experience, and not just about appeal, but both of them are very important.
All right, we're going to take your call, Tia, when we return. Plus, I want the church, Pastor Jakes, to talk about why did he feel it was important to be a part of the Faith Village Connection and encourage other pastors or other ministry leaders to get involved. We'll return 404-892-2703. It's Loving While Caregiving on Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Follow us on Twitter at Love and Relations Show. That's Love Relation SHO. It's Love and Relationships with Joyce Littell on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Loving while caregiving is the discussion today, and we thank you so much for joining us. Let's go to the phones and talk to Tia out of East Point. Your question or comment, Tia?
So, hi, I'm a service coordinator in a retirement community without services, and my comment is just wanting family members or, as they said, maybe church communities to encourage talking about things like dementia early when your elder is not in that state, because a lot of times what happens is that they begin to exhibit extreme symptoms, especially if they are living in a retirement community, and their quality of life is impacted because it's always kind of like they have to just get to safety or like are immediately rushed out, maybe placed in a nursing home or in a situation where they wouldn't have to be if the discussions about what will happen if this happened, if those discussions started earlier. So putting things in place like power of attorney or living will is so important. A lot of people don't want to talk about it at first, but it's important, especially when you see things on my end about what happens to your elders when these things aren't discussed or decided.
This is Tanya. Thank you for calling in, Tia. I've been an executive director for independent living, nursing home, and now assisted living. And what I typically would do, and sometimes it's on management to do it because families are in denial. You call the families in and you talk to them about what you're seeing and the behaviors and what their loved one is experiencing. And you at that point begin to educate them on if this happens, then this is where we are. If this happens, then this is where we are. So as it's graduating, or escalating, then they have the information and the knowledge, and they know, because things aren't going to get better. It's going to be a challenge. And I know working in an independent living community, it is a challenge for management when you have someone, because other residents are coming to you and they're complaining about that resident.
Right.
Because of things that they're doing. And so you have to balance it out, you know, with heart and with hand. And sometimes you have to be firm with the families, because we know after time you might have to do violation letters because they are taking the flower pots off the tables or doing things in the elevator, in the hallways that they should not be doing. And so then it's escalating and it's creating a lot of tension for staff. But I think, you know, they don't know. So we have to step up a lot of times and communicate to those family members that this is where we are and have resources there available to give to them. And, you know, let them know about support group. Let them know about the Alzheimer's Association and places that they can go to get information. But sometimes that talk has to happen, and the earlier, the better.
All right. Nia, thank you. Did we touch upon your question or comment?
You did. Thank you. And can you say Happy Social Work Month to all the social workers out there?
Yes, ma'am. Happy Social Work Month. You all do great work and important work, and we thank you every day, especially as a service coordinator, for what you do. You don't always have the resources and the support, but, you know, you still do the work that's needed.
And make it happen. Yes.
Making it happen, and that's what we are all about. Church is important for a lot of our elders in our community. So how can the faith community support their congregations around helping those with dementia, and why, Pastor Jakes, was it important to you?
Well, the reason why it is important is because the DNA of the church is to help all. It is part of what Jesus said in Matthew 25. He said, those who are in prison, you go to see about them. Those who are hungry, you feed them. Those who are sick, you visit them. And it is a part of the DNA of the church. And so dementia is just one of many. I deal with a whole bunch of areas, from persons being abused in the home to just molestation, and it's all a part. It's all grouped in together. And so when this opportunity came for Light of the World to be a part of the dementia, the Faith Village family, it is important because a lot of people, and especially our community, don't even know that they are living with dementia. And so this brought awareness to our church. And so training, not only for the pastors, but for the leaders, is necessary so that we can identify and be able to set up ministries and structures to be able to address the needs of persons dealing with dementia, not only the persons living with it, but also the caregivers as well. And so that's the reason why our church is involved in it.
And why is it important? And why did you choose Faith Village, the Connection? And tell us a little bit more about that.
So Faith Village Connections is a nurse-led group where I got with some Tanya Miller, Mia, and Jackie Thornton. It's a group of ladies. We came together and, you know, my research is in dementia, and we say, how can we really help these families? And realizing that the DNA of the church is to help all, you know, with all conditions and diseases, we decided that's where we need to go. And so our whole goal is to promote dementia awareness. Faith Village Connection's goal is to promote dementia awareness in churches, and by giving them the tools, the knowledge, and the resources that they need to support their congregation and their community members. And that is the whole goal. And since we took off, we've been working with AARP. We are working with Light of the World Church International, Destiny Christian Center, which is in Fayetteville, and then also Our Lady of the Lords, which is downtown Atlanta. Those are three churches that have committed with Faith Village Connection, saying, you know what, we're on board. We want to be that church to start this dementia-friendly journey so we can get families back into church. And then those that are in church, they can feel comfortable and know what resources they can have.
Have there been any challenges since you've started this initiative?
No, not really. it has been all uphill. We do a two-hour session, and we do a four-hour session, which is primarily for the leaders of the church. And the two-hour session is for anyone to come to. And they can also come to the four-hour, but we really get more in-depth so that churches have the resources they need. Being in this area for over 20-plus years, I know that when members have this to deal with, they go to the doctor and they go to their pastor.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so there are so many competing priorities, as Pastor Jake shared a few minutes ago, that they have to do. And having this information is so vitally important. So when that member comes, they can direct them to a support group. They can direct them to information. They can direct them to the Alzheimer's Association, to AARP. We have Kay Sabetta, who is a part of this team and local here in Atlanta, and she is at all things that we do and was one of the first to commit to funds to help us with this. And we also got funds from the Georgia Alzheimer's Association, and we're looking at other grants that will help us to continue this vitally important work.
All right. We're going to continue the conversation, Loving While Caregiving, when we return. And Gar and Jackie will take your calls when we return as well. I want you all to think about, and let's talk about this. So let's talk about relationships and dementia. I've been hearing the term care partners. How does it differ from caregiving? 404-892-2703. We'll be back.
Now back to Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
It's Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. We've been talking about loving while caregiving right here on Love and Relationships. And I know that the caregiver, it's a challenging role. when you're taking on the responsibility. And both Betty Jakes and Mia Chester are here as someone that can talk about, Camilla White is someone that's here talking about their role as caregiving. You were in the break talking about a story and the relationship and the responsibility. Betty Jakes, tell us more.
This is Betty Jakes. I was talking about earlier in the commercial break that during the time that my mom was sick and my stepdad, he was the primary caregiver. And there were things that he was very active in doing. He was active in going to church. He was active in going to the gym. And he no longer became a part of that anymore because he had to spend most of his time with her. And he didn't know about resources or how to get resources for the help that he needed for someone to come in to sit with her. And so when Faith Village came along, they really helped me to understand how I needed to be of a better help in helping with alleviating him to do some things that he needed to do. Also, he had to have surgery because he was so busy taking care of her that his health started to fade. Wow. And so he had to have a hip surgery. And he was down for a period of time, and he could not take care of her because of his hip. So we had to, me and my sisters and brothers had to rotate out to help him and also help her until he was able to get back on his feet to continue caring for her. During this process, my eyes were really opened to how there were certain things that I could not see because I did not have the information that I needed to be aware of what to see. And it allowed me to, once I got the information, I was able to go down and enjoy my mother so much more because a lot of times when you're dealing with patients that have dementia, a lot of times they will do things and you would, like for instance, she just got up one day and started walking and normally with no assistance. And I was like, all this time she's been putting on, but she really wasn't putting on. It was the dementia. It was the way her brain, the way it affected her brain. And so once I got educated to that, I was more understanding that she really wasn't putting on the times that she needed the assistance to get up and to need assistance to be helped up to the bathroom and to get up to go eat dinner. She really needed that help. So it allowed me to be able to help her more and to also enjoy her and not be angry and think that she was just putting on when she really wasn't putting on. Those were some of the things that I learned during the classes when they came to Light of the World Church. I was able to learn from those things so that I could be more understanding to her. Because a lot of times when you are the caregiver or the child or the helper, a lot of times you don't see things and you don't understand the things that people that have dementia are going through. But they really do, in this class that they gave our church, it really helped me to understand her even more, especially with the virtual reality test that they gave. It really helps you to understand that they really are losing a lot of their memory. They're losing a lot of the way that they used to think and the behavior, the things that they used to do for themselves. They're no longer able to do those things.
Mm. And as a caregiver, Camilla White, what has been an eye-opener for you?
The resources that were made available to me through the aging services. I did not know that they would come into my home and inspect my home. I definitely did not know that. When I first, my mom came to live with me December of 2014. My husband had just passed away all of a sudden. So it was already, I was already in trials and tribulations. Everything was just going downhill. So I had nowhere to turn, but the aging services came into my home. They inspected my home. They told me I need to take the rugs up. I need to put the bars on. I had no idea whatsoever what I needed to do. They gave me the resources that I needed. They even came in. They gave me a shower chair for my mom. They did a lot of work for myself and my mom, actually. And family was important, too, but I didn't have the support of my siblings. which is really important.
It is.
Because you can't do it by yourself. It takes a village
to take
care of someone that is suffering from one of the 70 different dementias out there, or either categorized as Alzheimer's by itself. Mm-hmm. It's just not easy. You know, I've been in a corner at night, crying because I didn't know what mama was going to do next. And to just watch her decline from a state of being like we are today, walking and talking like we're doing now, to being totally immobile in that wheelchair. Her left side is declining as well. Her conversation is so discombobulated, you have to actually sit with her and piece it together to help her. She was at the table one day, and the girl accidentally spilled water. She couldn't get the words out. She hollered. And everybody got real quiet in the dining facility, but that's because she's at a point now she can't express herself. So, go to the Alzheimer's Association, call that 1-800-272-3900 number, and, get the resources that you need. They speak over 200 languages as well. Get with your church, just let it out. Because that support group, I'm telling you now, I know from experience, is something that you actually need. And to Dr. Epps' point as well, I'm a part of the TeleSavvy research, okay? And it took me some time to get there. I'm going to tell you now, you're not doing any research on me. You're not cutting on me. You're not doing anything to me, because that's the way our family, that's the way we were raised, from things that happened to us as a community back in the day. But, I've learned through going throughout the state of Georgia as a community educator for the Alzheimer's Association, an educated community is one that's going to come forward. They're going to do the research, and they're going to help us get to where we need to get. And that is, hopefully, say one day we have one person that survived some form of dementia or either Alzheimer's.
You know, how important, you talked about sibling and family support. And I know in my family, there's a member that has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she has 4 children. So how important is it for all the children to have the same amount of knowledge to care for that person?
I'll tell you, it's very important, Joyce, for all of the family members. Some of them are going to be in denial. Mm-hmm. I've been in a room with 4 or 5 siblings and mom or dad, and they're trying to decide what to do. And you have one sibling, well, I'll just take mama home. Got another sibling, well, mama don't have dementia. Ain't nothing wrong with mama. You go through so many dynamics. But when everybody can get on board and work together for the betterment of their loved one, that is when it works out the best. And then having, sometimes you have a sibling there in California. They need to send a check.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Keep it real.
And when they go on vacation, they need to come home, mm-hmm, and see mama for 2 weeks instead of going in the Bahamas, because it creates a lot of anxiety amongst the ones who are there and doing, and then they're in the Bahamas posting pictures of how they're doing everything, and they're not giving anything back to the parents who raised them. Mm-hmm. So you have to have that balance amongst siblings and that communication. And if they're not going to do it, and you still have to do it, look for that church, those other family, those other resources in the community to help.
Things we're going to attack when we come back. I did mention hearing this term, care partners, and the difference between the care partner and the caregiver. We definitely want to address that. And Jackie, out of Fairman, I understand you're the one that I need to talk to about it. Plus, Gar, as well as Todd, will take your calls. And here's one other thing that we definitely want to delve into. As we continue the conversation around relationships and dementia, let's discuss a recent story that has sparked debate regarding Dan Gaspy and his wife, Bea Smith. Dan Gaspy recently revealed that he is in a new romantic relationship while continuing to care for his wife. We'll bring that up when we return right here on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Now back to Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
definition of a man was to never cry, work till you're tired.
It's Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Let's go to the phones and talk to Gar. Gar, you on? What's your question or comment?
Yeah, very important show, first thing I must say. Very important. The question I would like to ask is prevention. Now, I've read that crossword puzzles and learning another language helps prevent dementia. Now, like my dad, he's like 91 years old, and when I go in his house, he got crossword puzzles everywhere. He's still driving everything. So what is your take on that?
So I think research is telling us that there needs to be a kind of multi-approach to preventing, and I don't often use the word preventing. I like to say reducing the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. And what we know is that, you know, having a healthy lifestyle through exercise, diet, social engagement, and brain-challenging activities can all be helpful. But we like to say all of those things need to be done altogether, you know, if possible, but done regularly. So, you know, we hear a lot about crossword puzzles. I would say anything that's going to be challenging for you or for your father is helpful because we need to create those new pathways in the brain. But the other thing I'll tell you to remember is that we've heard the saying before, whatever's good for your heart is good for your brain. So these are lessons that we've heard before. We just want to remember those. And I think if he's still driving, he sounds like he's doing really, really well. And we just want to promote that independence that he has and that need to learn and take on those challenging games or crossword puzzles. I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. I know my mother does a lot of word search. And she starts coloring and she starts scrapbooking and she's 87 and she's about as sharp as
as a
young person because she was an educator and she constantly does things to keep her mind going. And I know how important, you know, and how significant it has become in her life. And so as often as we can, we need to keep them engaged in something.
Exactly, Joyce. And let me say, retiring does not mean doing nothing. Okay?
Right.
You have to keep the brain going. And a lot of times what you have is you have a couple that has been married a lot of years or a few years. One of them passes on, and they're in the house by themselves all day long doing nothing. They're depressed, grief sets in, all other kind of things, and the brain has nothing to work with. You know, if you have a parent, you're an adult child, get mom and dad out the house. Get them to the senior center. Get them involved in something. Isolation is one of the worst things that can happen to our seniors. Mm-hmm. They need to be around people, not just television. Maybe it's a dog or a cat that also help them with that companionship. But they have to be around other people or they're going to lose it. What they say, if you don't use it, you're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be around other people. Vitamin B is also good. All of the vitamin Bs help with your brain. And like Mia mentioned, health care and a healthy lifestyle. But you still have to stay engaged and be around other people.
Let's talk to Jackie of Fairburn. Now, Jackie, I was told you can answer this one for me. Care partners, caregiving. What's the difference?
Oh, it's my pleasure to join the team. It's been a dynamic conversation today. And what I like to share about caregiving is that perspective of others doing for, others doing everything for someone. And we just brought up this conversation about if you don't use it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. What happens oftentimes in a caregiving exchange, it's one-dimensional, one-sided. And the person that is the care receiver doesn't get to give back. So care partnerships is that beautiful village-based concept where everyone involved, whether they are practitioners and clinicians, whether they are neighbors and friends and faith individuals in your faith community, your direct caregiver, meaning generally the person that lives in the home with someone who needs additional care. But the care partnership vision and our mission to get people there is that the person who is the care receiver gets to give back. Reciprocity is so important in the human experience. People live to give and to give and to give back. And when you take away by caretaking and caregiving, the words we use really matter. Mm-hmm. And if you've been a person that's been a caregiver yourself, you've been in the community giving and doing extraordinary things, and now the role reverses and changes, it can be debilitating and more debilitating than the diagnosis itself. When people are given an opportunity to give back and a part of reciprocating care, you'll see individuals grow and actually sustain and have a more vibrant livelihood when we change our words, when we change our behaviors, and let those folks that are having challenges still have opportunity to give back.
All right. Thank you, Jackie. Jackie couldn't be with us, but she is a part of our Faith Village Connection and Sage Navigator team, and we're glad that she was able to call in.
All right. Let's talk to Todd. Todd, your question or comment?
Hey, Joyce, Betty, your husband, you say it's Pastor Jakes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mia, Carmela, and Tanya. I didn't catch everything, so if you covered this already, you can just move on to the next caller. I just didn't catch it. But you should talk about the probable projected cost with the with having to deal with this, because there's things that you have to unfortunately consider. Senior citizens that have Alzheimer's still have tax responsibilities if they're generating income from their work when they didn't have Alzheimer's, their retirement. They have property taxes, they have insurance needs to be met, they have utilities that have to be paid, and although it's good that you may be willing to do them on your own, on their behalf, to make sure that things are taken care of, sometimes it's more cost-efficient to establish a trust for them so that you can reduce the cost and the tax responsibility so that you can take care of them longer and more efficiently. Have you guys talked about this? Because this is a serious dilemma that sometimes happens with people that have this issue, because the family just keeps pitching in, but money gets drained. It doesn't need to be drained. Mm-hmm. Have you talked about this?
So, Todd, thank you for bringing that up. We have not spoken about that yet. But part of when we go out and educate the churches, we have a part one and a part two. And a part two is after they receive the education on dementia, they might have a family member that is living with dementia. Now, what do you do? And so we have an action plan. And part of the action plan is where we bring people in so they can talk about establishing trust, end-of-life care, things that they need to put in place. And Camilla, you probably can talk a little bit about that a little bit more, but you are so right, Todd.
Absolutely. It can be financially draining. I know from experience with my mother and my father. My father left this world last year from heart disease, but he was also diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And he was one of those macho men, couldn't tell him anything, and we couldn't do anything. And when Dad left here, there was no will, there was no long-term insurance, there was nothing for him nor my mom. So in between Camilla, I had to take care of my parents. We had to pitch in. They did pitch in to help me to bury my dad, but there was nothing out there. So I ended up continuing my mom's life insurance. It was a struggle because of her age, but I was able to do that. Then we had the issue of her house. She couldn't continue to pay the mortgage on the house. They had a second loan on that house, and we did not know that as the kids. And we were faced with all of that at the fifth hour, last minute. And we had to end up sell the house. House sold for nothing. We got nothing on that end. So the financial burden for my mom rests with me. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all. I thank God that I'm financially stable to take care of my mother because of the military. But I tell you, if it wasn't for the military out there helping and supporting my mom and helping me, I don't know where we would be with her because, it's a heavy burden. Financially, it will drain everything you got when you if you're not properly prepared. So as we go through the community, you know, educate. Let them know. Put that will in place. Get that long-term insurance because that will pitch in when the time comes, especially if you're going to put them into a community. Because those communities are running $3,000 to $4,000 a month, okay? And that's just for assisted living. Now, you take them and put them in memory care, it's about a little bit more than that, maybe $1,000 to $2,000
yes,
difference
ma'am.
There. Mm-hmm. So you got to look out for that, and you know, and watch your parents. You know, if they start to change, like Mia and Dr. Epps talked about earlier, take them to the doctor, get that early diagnosis because that is so so critical, and put the things in place that you need to put in place to take care of your parents, because everybody is not financially stable. And there isn't a lot of money out there from the federal government or the state that's going to give you the aid that you actually need. And that's why a lot of your loved ones end up in your house, in your front room. I know because I've been to several homes in the state of Georgia. Their parents are living in the front room in one of those hospital beds because they can't afford to do anything else with them. Social Security pensions are little to nothing. Okay? So avoid that. You know, do what you got to do now.
Thank you so much. We'll be back.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Now back to Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
Hi, I'm B. Smith. Welcome to B. Smith with Style.
She was a mass communicator on a personal level. And then she got the opportunity through television and pictures and different mediums to communicate her inner self through her outer beauty.
Spice Festival, right?
The smile. Nobody who ever meets her not remarks how amazing her smile is because it comes from her soul. When you had everything in the form of a person, the perfect person for you, and you watch them slowly dissolve and you go down with them, and took me into depths of despair and depression that no one will ever really understand. You all right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, if you're there. But I don't tell my mother. I told Mom.
What'd your mom say?
Mm-hmm.
I saw the change in my dad when it came to him not being able to change. Like, he was just getting, and it was affecting him. Her not listening to him.
Where were you, Dad?
But, yeah, right. Put in the water.
I had committed to, like, I'm going to stay here until she's better, not knowing that there is no better. It was going to be just decline, and I just couldn't leave my dad.
B. No, B. Where's the B?
I remember he was like, I want to talk to you about something. And I was like, oh, what, you're dating? And he was like, how'd you know? And I was like, I've been 16, I've been 18, I've hid stuff from parents.
You know, I've been married for 26 years. I've been with B 27 and a half years. Alex and I are now going on a year and a half being together. I believe in the sanctity of marriage, but I don't believe death do you part means that because you made a commitment, if the person is not there, that you should sit there and watch your life shrivel up. And that's why I am where I am today, taking care of B and having someone else in my life.
That's right with it.
Okay, here's the question. What can we learn from their story regarding the challenges of caregiving and relationship dynamics? Who want to dive in first?
This is Mia. I'll dive in. I think that one of the things we can learn from this is that relationships, and when you involve caregiving, it becomes even more complex. So what we're seeing here is B. Smith progressed through the disease, which will happen, but also her husband, you know, questioning where will he be, should she pass away, and what will his life look like. These are things that caregivers have to consider. I think that also it's important to know that this is not a new situation. Oftentimes in assisted living communities, we see people living with dementia develop relationships with maybe another resident living there. So I think that just this is, you know, being on a public platform has started a very good dialogue about how complex caregiving can be and how caregivers need care partners, caregivers, all need to communicate what's important to them. And, you know, I often hear people talk about deal breakers. And, you know, this speaks to what you need to establish in those relationships before a diagnosis happens, because a person may become nonverbal and they can't speak for themselves. So I think if we learn anything from this, I think we need to have conversations early on and really set the table for how we would want things to be in our own relationships. But I'll also add in that it's easy to judge the situation, but we never know, you know, the conversations that they've had beforehand. So we just want to be mindful that this is not uncommon, but it's definitely on a public platform.
Pastor and Mrs. Jakes, we got a couple up in here, up in here. You all's thoughts. Come on up.
I sat back because I was listening to Mia. You gave a great great diagnosis mm-hmm. on the situation. I guess because I'm a pastor and I teach values, especially relationship values, and I teach that the marriage is a triangular situation. As the wife, and there's the husband, and then there's God. And one of the things is that when you make a commitment to someone, it is, and I've married several people, to death do you part, for better, worse, richer, for poor, in sickness and in health. And so I do have some questions that I have on this situation. I do know that you're right, Mia, that we don't know what their discussion was all about. But when you bring something to a public platform, you open up yourself for everyone to chime in on it. I don't know how my wife feels about that.
This is Betty. Mia, you spoke so eloquently, and you too, Pastor Jakes. I feel like that when you get to a place when you're married and you need to make it, you think about your future and you think about your health and you think about there might come a time where I might not be able to speak for myself. I think that the conversation needs to take place where we need to do a will, a living will, so that my will can speak for me and what I want for myself when I can no longer speak for myself.
You're absolutely right. One of the things that happens, and this would be my concern, as I've worked with families and people with dementia, sometimes they have those periods where they are very lucid and they know what's going on. And to be in your house and to see this other lady interacting with your husband, I think that there can be some feelings and some emotions, because in that short period of lucidness, you know exactly what's going on. You know, a lot of the times you may not be able to really discern, but those periods of lucidness as you progress in the disease, and I don't think B. Smith had that conversation. She was very open initially with the disease and letting everybody know. And like he said, she was a great communicator. She would have communicated that part.
All right, let's go around the table. We only have a few more minutes to encourage all those who are listening that are dealing with someone who's suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's. Let's give some final words of encouragement. And Dr. Epps, I would like for you to, as well as Mia, close out with some direction that we can give people when they need a little bit more information. Camilla?
Yes, I would like to just table the fact that as a caregiver, care partner, whichever role that you're actually in, reach out to the resources that you have at hand. And I would say start with the Alzheimer's Association, because that is a jewel, 1-800-272-3900, so that they can help you. Get involved with your church. Get involved with support groups. And, you know, look at what your parents have. You know, parents get older. We don't know what's going on in that house. So get into the books. Find out what they're doing. Thank you.
Yes, this is Tanya, and I would just say don't suffer in silence. Reach out. There are many opportunities for you to get information, and please do that.
This is Mia. I just want to encourage caregivers to know that they are not alone, and most importantly, to remember that this year Alzheimer's and other dementias will cost the nation about $290 billion. So it's imperative that we act early on.
All right. And this is Dr. Epps. And if y'all want more information, we're having our next community education forum on March the 23rd in Fairburn. And please call 404-549-4504 for more information. It's from 10 to 12.
Pastor Bakes, let your be the final word of encouraging our faith community to get involved.
I want to encourage all pastors to get involved and churches because that is the base for our community. And so if all pastors, please come and get equipped, get trained so that we can be a resource in our community. And to all of our caregivers, keep hope alive, keep looking up, and keep connecting with someone else.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if you are having someone in your family that are dealing with these two issues, I hope that the information that you heard today will help you get through it and provide some form of resource in which you can provide the proper care for the person in your family. Again, we thank you for listening to Love and Relationships on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.